This is Live at Politics and Prose, a program from Slate and Politics and Prose Bookstore in Washington, D.C., featuring some of today's best writers and top thinkers.
Zoe Quinn is one of gaming industry's most critically acclaimed indie developers. She might be the funniest indie developer. She is also one of the world's most courageous advocates for victims of online abuse. With her grassroots organization, Crash Override Network, and with her own writing and speaking, and just personal bravery, she's become an absolute hero to anyone who's been the target of online hate. I'm not going to tell you about the attacks that Zoe had to face down, because you know about Gamergate. You know that, in Zoe's words, Gamergate became a flashpoint, for the online hatred that helped put Donald Trump in the White House. And you all know that Zoe fought back against that hate, and that she won. She learned to protect herself and to teach other people to protect themselves. It's an honor to have her at PNP, and I'm really glad you all came to listen.
Thank you for that intro, and I totally went the wrong way trying to get up on the stage, so we're off to a good start. Hi, and thanks for coming out and supporting Crash Override, or as I sometimes like to call it, the most depressing OkCupid testimonial of all time. If you're not familiar with Gamergate, even if you are, it was kind of a mess of memes and jargon anyway, so even if you're internet savvy as is, it's still like, what the hell is this? To give you sort of the TLDR of it, essentially I dated this other programmer on and off again, mostly off again, for about 5 months. And instead of just letting it go, since it was kind of a really crappy abusive relationship, he offshored that abuse to the internet, like Kickstarter, but for yelling at people that you're mad at. So that quickly escalated into this full-blown conspiracy theory about how I was secretly controlling the entire gaming industry with the shadowy network of makeouts, which is still not even going to be the most ridiculous part of this story, so just bear with me. I'm going to take you into Mordor, but we're going to come out on the Shire. I'm going to talk about some subjects that are going to be a little bit rough if you've been a survivor of domestic violence or are probably just someone who didn't have a good day on November 7th in general. So just FYI, that's a thing in case you want a content warning. What happened immediately. Like, I knew that there was something out there about me before I knew what it was, because there were suddenly all these people yelling at me. And kind of like a kid counting the distance of a storm with thunderclaps, like to see how far it is, it was like that, but with my phone notifications buzzing. And then they would buzz quicker and quicker and quicker until it's just like I had to not look at it. And that first night, all I could do was like numbly scroll down as I watched people go through and assemble this weird constructed fiction of how I was ruining gaming by existing and having the gall to make a game. That quickly turned into threats of murder, rape, anything you can imagine, anything you would find in a Fox News comment section. And everybody that was even tangentially related, and some people I still haven't met, became targets as well. We were all very, it was simultaneously the most personal and least personal thing in the entire world, because the attacks were extremely personal because it was about me and this fictionalized version of my life that an angry ex had created. But at the same time, I was a convenient stand-in for any sort of anxiety that a number of people had about people who weren't like them existing in spaces they cared about. This rapidly went outside of the gaming industry and became a flashpoint for the what we're now calling the alt-right, but really, these guys have been around forever. I say guys, but it's everybody. When Milo Yiannopoulos put me on Breitbart, and that's really where things started to get a lot scarier, and we saw places like Stormfront openly were trying to recruit a bunch of gamers that were mad at me. And that got very weird. It's still weird. It's like, I don't know if you've ever read Hitchhiker's Guide, but the whole cloaking device in that is the someone else's problem thing, where it's like, you can just park a spaceship on a planet because it's too weird. So your brain just doesn't, you're just like, nope, this is someone else's problem. I can't parse this. So it's interesting in the process of this book, like going through and trying to do my own autopsy and like being like, oh yeah, right, this all actually happened and it is as ridiculous as it sounds. The worst part about that though wasn't so much the threats, because like and the threats were bad, don't get me wrong. Like, people were talking about putting dead animals in my mailbox and sending me pictures of my dad's house and calling my dad and calling me and usually not knowing what to do when they actually got through because I didn't change my number for a few weeks. And they they seem very confused when I answered because they'd be like, is this Zoe Quinn? And I'm like, yeah, you dialed my number. Like, were you just hitting buttons randomly? Or they're like, oh, you know your phone number's on the internet, right? And I'm like, uh-huh. And they're like, oh. And then they either panic and hang up or apologize. But I mean, if nothing else, it's weird, right? Who in my generation calls people? God. So there was that component of it, and it was hard to face other people that became targets as with a tenuous connection to me. But the sadder part for me was going through and seeing all of these institutions that were in name supposed to be the sort of thing that is there to help completely fumble and fumble spectacularly and usually contribute to the problem. I had to deal with too many members of the press just simply reporting on the false accusation that I had, if you actually look at what would have taken this for this to be true, that I had traveled back in time to sleep with a game reviewer that worked for a website I had already written for, so I obviously could not have gotten that connection any other way. Slept with him to get a review of my game that never existed, and the game was also free. And also, why did I set my target for Kotaku and not, like, the New York Times or something? Whatever. Basically, I'm a time-traveling hoe is more or less what the chief accusation came down to and is up there with the other accusations about the numerous people that I've supposedly murdered, that I am a treasonous person that should be tried under the Logan Act, which is really funny if you know anything about that, and that I am actually a vampire. Like, there are some people that think I am actually a vampire. It's great. Those ones are more fun. But seeing the fact that so many members of the media would just report on this instead of saying, like, oh, she was accused of having sex for reviews, and then not following that up and just spreading the misinformation. It's like, you could finish the sentence and say that the never happened. The never happened part seems kind of important, but what do I know? I'm just a time-traveling vampire hoe. Seeing big tech industries and people that I talked to that were in positions to help, that could press a button and make stuff actually not suck, go, well, I don't know about this. This death threat doesn't say what weapon they'd use to kill you. So, you know, it's not actually a terms of service violation. But I'm sorry, we have to get back to, like, shutting down anybody who posts a GIF of the Olympics, like, immediately. My bad. And unfortunately, I decided to try to do something with law enforcement against my better judgment after they were brigading the IRS with false reports of tax fraud to get me audited. I'm like, okay, well, I probably need a paper trail in case this actually happens. And, you know, it was like a constant state of shock at finding out how much of this worked. Like, Intel pulled ads from a blog that had nothing to do with any of this because somebody said games are really broad and there's no one gamer identity anymore because there's too many people who play games now, and that's great. This got turned into this weird, oh, they're saying gamers are dead. They're literally killing, like, someone's like, they're literally killing us now. It's like, no, someone, it's a good thing that more, whatever. So, like, major companies like Intel and Mercedes-Benz and all of these people who should know better were bending the knees. So I kept being like, oh, okay. The people who, there's one thing to get mad at the baby that's driving your car. It's another thing to be mad at the person who gave them the keys in the first place. And they're not taking it away. And the most shocking thing to me was, like, while I did go the law enforcement route, was, like, I knew things were bad, but I didn't know how bad. Because I'm still, like, an easy victim for that system to support. You know, I'm like a younger white woman that's like super, that's a home run for them in terms of what they think a victim looks like. But even then, it was still that same old systemic, oh, she was asking for it, and also we didn't actually do it, but also she was asking for it. I mean, have you looked at her? In addition to the fact that I went up to get this restraining order against my ex because he was talking about doing a sequel, because going on and encouraging them for the entirety of it while saying harassment is bad, but here's like a few more people I think she might have slept with, and also here's like, you should look into these people. And actually, I'm saying the number is 100 now. I'm saying she cheated on me with 100 people. Which is like, who has the time? Like, especially in 5 months. That's impressive. I went up to this judge with like a stack of legal documents like this big, and I'm like, I watched his face as he like solved the, he like, because they do, in civil court, everyone's just kind of sitting around and they basically call your number up, you go through the process, and they go on to the next one. He got my big stack of I had printed out so much stuff, I actually broke my friend's printer. Because law enforcement doesn't know what to do with video either, even though I had video, even though a lot of this happened with videos. And I just saw his like eyes go like this after a few pages, and he's like, all right, what do you want me to do here? And I'm like, I don't really know. I kind of thought that was like your thing. And he had basically taken what I had said verbatim and written it as a special clause under the restraining order, which, if you know anything about the legal system, that is a really fucking bad move. Hi, game developer who's like shaking and freaked out and is like holding a stack of death threats. Come up with complex free speech regarding legal terms on the spot. Also, we're not going to tell you. I thought he would translate it into like legalese or know anything. That was not the case. And that restraining order meant that I was having court battles with my ex for 2 years. Even though the restraining order, the maximum that you can get in Massachusetts is one, it was still that full time plus another year of having to fight this thing. That was the opposite of what I wanted. Like, I didn't want to see him anymore. But regardless, I could fill a number of books with just the blow-by-blow ridiculous anecdotes of stuff that happened. And especially since it's the internet, and especially because it became this pop culture thing, you know, like, there's so much. It was like kind of hard to write this because it's like, do I talk about the time that a First Amendment attorney turned Jew salesman who thinks his semen is literally magic spent five figures on a private detective to follow me and my boyfriend at the time? Or do I talk about the time that the Disturbed's lead singer, David Draymond, ruined my breakfast? Like, you know, all of these things sound ridiculous when I say it out loud like that. But then again, how many people have a breakup so bad the UN has to get involved and it helps usher in fascism? Regardless, that's not what this book is, though. I decided to write this book partially after loudly shitposting on Twitter enough that someone noticed. And I was like, no, you should actually write that book, though. But mainly because, you know, I'm still an engineer at heart. And when I have to do something over and over and over, I'm like, can I automate this? That would be better. Can I get a robot to do this for me? So it seemed easier for me to just put it all in dead tree format, because if nothing else, it became so apparent to me that what happened to me was not at all uncommon. And yes, how it blew up and the historical role that it played is weird. But, you know, it's kind of like finding shit in your food at a restaurant. I don't know. I should have asked if I could swear. Okay, good, good. Thank God. Yeah. Sorry, C-SPAN. But it's like finding shit in your food at a restaurant. It doesn't matter if it's a little bit, or if you even just know that there's some shit somewhere in there, versus if you eat an entire turd sandwich. You're not going back there. It's bad. It's all bad. So it doesn't, you know, I hear too many people be like, oh, you know, what happened to me wasn't, I don't want to compare it. It's like, no, any is bad. It should be zero. And, you know, what had happened to me became this gigantic public flashpoint. So many people were coming to me and being like, oh, I feel like you're the only person I can talk to about what happened to me. And I quickly, I don't know, it wasn't until writing this book that, and talking with other people about it, that it was pointed out to me that a common recurring theme in my life is that if something doesn't exist that I wish existed, I go out and make the thing instead of waiting for someone to do it for me. And I don't know if that's because I'm the daughter of a mechanic or what, but I'm thankful for that. So the last court date I had, the judge ended up telling me, you know, if this is what I don't understand this whole internet thing. It's like, but if this is what it's like, you should just go offline. And I'm like, I'm an independent game developer. That there's no offline version of that. You're essentially asking me to give up my career. And he said on his way out the door, like looking back, was like, you're a smart young kid, find a new career. So I did, motherfucker. I started a grassroots organization after 7 months of this, during which I'd been unable to go home. There were people outside of my house, like waiting for me. And you kind of have to play this Schrodinger's Nazi thing. It's like, are they just some edgy Hot Topic asshole, or are they Elliot Rodger because they sound the same online? And I was tired of watching, like, I'm a game designer. I think in systems. And so the systemic failure was so obvious to me and became so predictable that, like, even early on when other people were becoming targeted, we're like, we know what's going to happen. I found their IRC channels that they were coordinating a lot of the attacks in, because I was a shitty chanter when I was younger too. I know what all of this feels like, where all of this comes from. I was super into hacktivism. I was one of those assholes that like was like, yeah, let's get Scientology when I was a teenager. So it's like, I know that the illegal shit happens in IRC. So I sat there and I monitored and I recorded it for weeks. And I got in front of the next targets every time I could and warned them in advance. You should lock down this, and this. They're probably going to do that next. Don't do this, because that's like a way that they got my dad's phone number. Let's fix you up. And this turned into formalizing that to help more people other than people who were just targeted for a loose association of being suspected of maybe being in a room with me once, became Crash Override. And it's like, okay, how do we build the solution to a solution? Because there's no one. And it's like, okay, we got to make sure that what we create can't be used to abuse other people, because like that was a big component of what happened to me, is like stuff that's supposed to help ends up being used against you. So it's like, okay, now let's craft it around consent and involvement of the person targeted, because that's the most important thing. The first thing that happens is you feel like you've completely lost control. And there's nothing that you can do better than to return some level of control back to someone's life in that case. So there's no one size fits all. Like, any response emotionally, any desires that you have to this stuff are valid. It doesn't matter if you want to hide. It doesn't matter if you want to speak out. Both of those are completely valid. And it makes me a little bit upset when people are like, it's so brave that you stood and fought. And like, I don't know, it was kind of stubborn. And I don't think it's not brave to be like, fuck this, I'm out. That just means that you can look at your own life and say, I actually do deserve better than this. So we would figure out what this person's end goal was and then work backwards for how we can achieve this. And every time we found ourselves having the same conversations over and over with people affected, we would try to, again, do that automation thing, I'd use the same tools that I use to make games to make an interactive checklist of like locking down, because it's like so many people don't understand that when you're targeted, it's so much work. Like, even just bagging and tagging, if you want to do that, or filling out reports, it's like work. And making that easier for people to do was like super important. And we found better success rates if it was like, here are small things that you can do in a row. Here's a number that goes up when you do it, because our brains like that. And it's all here. And you don't have to talk to another person when you're probably freaked out and don't want to talk to anybody anymore. And a big thing we did was try to act as an intermediary between these giant institutions that I was very mad at, and the people that were actually affected. So someone would come to us and say, this is happening to me here. I'm like, okay, have you filled out a report? Do you want action to be taken? And if they said yes, it's like, okay, I'm going to go try to hustle out a contact, because while the institutions were super broken, there were still people that wanted to do the right thing working within them. And anytime I could get movement, because there was someone, a working person in a broken system that could get stuff done, that like did so much to actually help people get the sort of results that they needed. And it was interesting how my writing in the second half of the book, which is entirely dedicated to my time working and trying to it's like the first part's the crash part, the second part's the override part, because I'm a total fucking dork, and I like stuff like that. It became very clear that, you know, like as I wrote this and I did more advocacy, because I've done client work, I say client, but we don't charge, up into thousands at this point. Like, I've handled thousands of these cases personally and over the last 2 years. And that sucks. That like super gets to you, not because of seeing all that and being reminded of when it happened to you, but going to the people that can press a button and fix it, hearing the bullshit, and then having to go back to that person and say, they saw, they didn't care. What do we do now? What do you want to do now? And, you know, there's a lot in the book that I'm going to be in trouble with for saying, but the thing with a lot of these institutions is they trade access for silence. And sometimes you have to burn a bridge that you're still standing on so they know you're not fucking around anymore. And I don't know if it does that, but I'm trying to hope, you know, gotta have that hope. So as depressing as it is to like look at these massive institutions that are failing us and see things like too many people wanting the solution to be more law enforcement, when it's the inverse is true, because people who are not white are disproportionately targeted, and we live in a country where the cops are more likely to kill you than help you in that regard. And beyond the fact that we have a punitive system where it punishes offenders and doesn't, instead of protecting targets, and the speed of these things takes so, it's like overnight your shit can go to hell and never come back. just in internet time, but then these, like, the law enforcement bodies move so slowly, it's years later when anything happens, and then it's usually like you're doing it to make a point, not because it'll actually help. It sounds bleak that basically everything is broken and nobody's doing what they should be doing, but the inverse is true too, if you think about it, because we do not have to wait for institutions, and we should not wait for institutions to give a shit about us. We have to take care of each other. That was the biggest thing I saw doing this work, is just having someone around that understood and could talk to you and wouldn't just say, go offline, or wouldn't just say, oh, well, it's like the equivalent of, oh, there's people on your lawn that want you to die. Just use the back door. It's fine. Everything's fine. Having that in their life and people that can do that sort of help and help with just the workload would be a better predictor of a more positive outcome than any action taken by law enforcement or tech platforms or anything. And that was immediate. So people with good support networks and that had some kind of savvy to either the social aspect of what was happening or the tech aspect, having that in their life was better than anything anybody that had like institutional power could do for them in that moment. So now I am passing on the savings to you. And by that, I mean, like, there are multiple chapters dedicated to, here's how you do it. I'm tired of being the person that has to do it. Because, like, if you think about it, the problem is people. The internet's Soylent Green. It's fucking people. Which means that we can be the solution, too, and we do not have to wait for institutions. Because, if nothing else, at least the trash fire of this current election, I feel like it's harder than ever for people to deny that shit's broken. And we got to take care of each other. And it's just like, okay, how do we teach people that are new with that how to come on board? How do we do that with, like, an eye towards restorative justice instead of, recreating punitive systems that end up just shuffling around harm? How do we do this in a way that minimizes compassion fatigue, which is, like, a fucked up term, but you know exactly what I mean when I say it. Basically, we are both the solution and the problem. And the thing is, the heavy lifting on fixing broken systems almost always falls to the people actually being harmed by them. And that needs to change. It has to be everybody. It's an everybody problem. Sometimes that means having to take aside a shitty uncle at Christmas and be like, look, you're being shitty. Sometimes that means being the friend they talk to. Sometimes it means just not doing things like spreading misinformation before checking it, especially because that's such a huge thing now and people are more aware of it. All of these things are doable, though. They're doable, and it's stuff that we can do today. It's not something that we have to wait for a cultural shift for. It's not something that we can put off and say is someone else's problem. That's something we can do today and now. And so, you know, I want to see a future where we're all actively in this together instead of just we are in this together regardless whether we like it or not. But we accept that responsibility, and we are our brothers and sisters and siblings' keepers. And the people that are targeted are not basically forced into activism and forced out of whatever they were doing before that, and they get that humanity back. Because it's like a full-time job being targeted. If you try to do anything else, it follows you there. If you try to do anything else, the reputation follows you there. That was a big thing that I was super worried about with this book, because it's like, oh, this is, I want the Gamergate thing to be a footnote, because at my heart, I'm still like, if a centaur, the bottom part was dad jokes, and the top part was like butt jokes, that's me. Like, I'm not fit for public consumption in this way. I was never trying to be like some Clinton or anybody in the public eye. Like, I'm like, no. I think I tweeted a few weeks before this all happened that I wanted to be the Oscar Wilde of video games and just throw out stuff atop a throne of boys. That's me. And, you know, I've talked to so many other targets, and their humanity has been taken away from them in that regard. And you get this hyper scrutiny of your own actions on top of the scrutiny from other people. And being able to just be a person should not be a privilege. That is a right everybody should have. And basically, suffer us, which is to live. Can I do Q&A and leave on a good line before I say something dumb about centaurs and dad jokes again? Okay, because it's a matter of time until a bad joke slips out. I'm really sorry. Okay. I thought is there a mic? Is there a, okay.
Yeah, I have two questions, and some of it came from my own reporting for a book called Mental Health Incorporated, which is how do you deal or suggest, one, to deal with the trauma that you and other victims have gone through? Because when I was doing my reporting about people in abusive institutional facilities, there was no help for them, and they just remained traumatized. And then secondly, what is your I know you just said the criminal justice system is more traumatizing and dangerous for many people in our society, of course, than how then is your, what are the legal or criminal tools that you think ought to be put into place that your activism could help generate? So it could be something where they, the people allowing it, could lose millions of dollars, like SBLC took away all the assets of the Klan and so on. What are some tools legally, and what can people do about trauma?
With the trauma part, one of the things that we focused on doing for people that were coming to us and that were already in crisis is we went through a lot of psychological first aid training, which is usually what people who are first responders to like disaster zones do. And a lot of that is just, that's something anyone can do because it's first aid. It's not like long-term psychology. And if you're able to help them in crisis, studies have shown that that's actually more effective at like lowering the impact of trauma on a person's life than long-term psychological treatment.
Right.
Because if you're there in the moment and can kind of do that triage, it's super helpful. And that's all very centered on getting them to feel stable again and giving them things to do, like really small minor tasks to take that back. And a lot of reflective listening is like one of the biggest parts of it. And you know, anybody can take that course online too. John Hopkins does it for free online. You can learn all of these techniques yourself. And it's like, seriously, even if you don't go into activism, it's just good. It's like everyone should know first aid. Everyone should know psychological first aid, because you can really help people through dark moments and be a huge difference in someone's life by just knowing this basic stuff. Regarding what I'd like to see law enforcement do, I would like to see
and
them
more civil tort system.
Right. They need to regulate other companies, because like most, our biggest problem with the way that we view privacy in the information age is thinking of this like, has this ever been made public and under any circumstances? If no, then it's private. That's not the case anymore. Like, how many websites have you signed up for where it says, here are terms of service, and you hit accept because it's like 20 pages long and doesn't make sense? If a service is free, the product is you. Your data, it can be put online and recirculated endlessly without your consent and without an effective way to remove it. And people don't really know that. And there's these whole companies called third-party information brokers that take your personal data and compile it and put it in searchable databases by the public. And that's where a lot of doxing, or when people get your home address and personal information, that's where that comes from. And getting yourself removed from that is very difficult. So I would love to see that regulated to hell and back. I would like to see laws put in place that treat privacy and data as an opt-in and not an opt-out. Because that's like there's a total lack of consent. And thinking of surveillance, not just from government institutions, but from private institutions as well. Because that's a major fucking problem right now that is not being addressed. So I would love to see, rather than trying to go after individual actors and do this like thing that basically require, like, because I think putting more people in jail for online abuse is going to do about as much to curb it as it has for domestic violence,
right,
or anything else, which is fucking nothing. So when you add that with the intersectional issues of like, if you're not cis, if you're not what was considered a good victim, which is always white, which is almost always female, which is almost always straight, you know, and like, especially considering that trans women of color have by far gotten the worst shit online, and like it's like in severity and duration, we cannot look at the criminal justice system as a victim-centered approach, and we need victim-centered approaches. And so it would be better to see, again, these things that enable it, that facilitate it, without getting to, it's like, so it's tricky because it's very easy to go too far in the opposite direction and target things like I'm brain farting. There's like one specific law in the Digital Communications Act, a Decency Act, that says a platform is not responsible for what is posted on it. That needs to stay in place to some extent. Otherwise, basically everything like Twitter, anything that has user-generated content, will shut down forever because it's almost impossible to regulate at the speed that would be necessary for. And the stuff can't be automated. Like, there has to be moderation. And that's kind of a weird thing that we had when internet forums were still a thing, but we don't have now. And, you know, there's a lot of the easy sidestep to even dealing with the legal approach is, I think, a consumer protection one. And look at it in terms of, did you mean to build this platform where Nazis can attack people on it? If no, you have a quality issue. You have a consumer safety issue. And then you don't have to get into free speech issues. You can avoid that whole like legal quagmire and focus on, is this product safe? And what does that mean? or even is this product setting terms of service and then not following up on it, not actually enforcing its own terms of service? I think there's like legal things that can be done there without over broadening stuff, so that like the number one thing that needs to go away is people saying that, oh, if we just get rid of anonymity, everything will be fine, because anonymity is the only reason I'm still here.
Right.
It's, and I mean, that's the real name policies that places like Facebook use, where it's like forcing you to use the name in your wallet as the thing that you are publicly displayed at, is super unfair to people who are not cisgendered. It's super unfair to sex workers. It's super unfair to a lot of survivors of domestic violence who need to hide. And privacy hurts all of them too. So it's like, if it's not good for the people who are most affected, and if like in both in frequency and in severity, then it's not a good solution. So we got to think of like, okay, how can we go after the institutions instead of individual bad actors? That was a very long response to that question.
No,
I'm sorry.
Great. Thank you. One other thing. Can you tell us and the viewers what is the main website for your information and activism that people can go visit?
Oh, just crashoverridenetwork.com.
Okay. Thank you so much.
Yeah, no problem.
Hello.
Hello.
Hi there. Your story is very inspiring, especially to me as a person who has been repeatedly bullied, not only for being what I call, you know, Asperger-like, but also as a person who stutters, but I don't take it lying down because I have keep calm and stutter on my shirt. My question is, when was that one moment when you realized that people are actually listening to me and they are not going through the and they're not going through the motions?
It depends on what day, because I definitely have days where it definitely feels like that's the case still, but I mean, like, that's the thing, is like, you're still a person who you are, even though all this stuff happens. So if you're not neurotypical and you have like trash, what I call trash brain, very informally and very scientifically, having that externalized and shouted back at you by thousands of people for 3 years makes it hard to believe in yourself or think that anybody cares about what you're having to say. But I mean, that's like been a big thing that I've gone through with, like, because I do have PTSD, and I have been in therapy for that for several years. And they have like an index from 1 to 100 that they do when they're like first dealing with diagnosis. And I scored an 89, I think, initially, which is like up there with combat veterans. Probably because it's like, it's not like Gamergate's the only bad thing that's happened to me. And it's there's no P in my PTSD, because it's constant and it's still ongoing. So, you know, like, having I'm down to like the 20s and teens now after years of like working on that. And a lot of it's been mindfulness and like dialectical behavioral therapy techniques, which is like, it's okay to feel like that. And it's okay to acknowledge those thoughts. It's like, it's, you know, when people are like, don't think about a pink elephant, you think about a pink elephant. It's like, accept that you're thinking about a pink elephant, and that's okay. And that's done a lot to like help mitigate some of the flashbacks, and that like, oh God, nobody's listening, I'm just shouting into the void. Also, being a stubborn asshole has helped, because it's like, I don't care if you're not listening to me, I'm going to say it anyway because it's true. And if you hate me, then you hate me. Get in line, man. It's just a day that ends in Y. You're not going to say anything to me that someone hasn't already for 3 years, you know? And sometimes you just got to do it anyway, even if you feel like, no, if you know it's right, and you know that and that's the thing too, is like, you hear from the people who hate you so much. You don't hear from the people who are like actually being affected as much, you know, because like they have less incentive to yell at you. And that's like something I've been trying to keep in mind. And like, I try to remember all the times that someone said something that really meant something to me, and I was like too shy or like too busy or whatever to let them know that, and just be like, okay, the hate will always be louder. It will always be louder. And I'm okay with that, because that's just how things work. Yeah. You don't have to clap after each one, by the way. Like, that's cool. Save your hands.
Just to change gears a little bit, you've talked before about you have RFID chip implanted in your finger.
I
and
do.
A magnet in your other one. Where would you like to see that kind of cybernetic type of implants go, and are you planning to get anything else done?
So while I have like my silly ones, I usually use it as an excuse to talk about like OpenAPS, which is trying to approach the way that we think about data when it comes to stuff in your body. Like OpenAPS focuses on insulin pumps specifically, because all of that data that you get from like pacemakers, insulin pumps, is you don't own it and you can't access it, which can slow down treatment. And I get the reason why that's the case, but there is an issue where more people could be served if we treated these platforms with less overbroad, very corporate, very like this belongs to me-ness when it's something that's in your body. So I would like to see the approach that we take to medical data be maybe reexamined in an ethical way that doesn't end up complicating the privacy issues as well as like collateral damage. Which I know isn't as fun as like the magnet or the chip, which I think right now is just, I showed a friend that I could reprogram it. Now it just pops up a window that says dicks and it's not anything right now. I used to give away free copies of Deus Ex. For people that aren't turbo nerds, that is a video game about cybernetic augmentation. I'd be like, high five, let me high five your phone. Hey, you got a video game now. Because I'm a dork. It's interesting too, because there's like a lot of weird stuff about what you can and cannot do to your own body that I take issue with. So anything that is helping to improve issues around bodily autonomy, I'm in favor of, regardless of if it's anything having to do with actual medical implants and stuff like that versus just silly shit I put in my hand. Which, that should be the title of my next book. Sorry, you have to walk so far. Can we get a crowd surfing thing going?
Hi, so I work in policy and political communications, and so I was most professionally interested in the second half of the book, looking at, you know, potential solutions, and I was disappointed but not terribly surprised that you seemed a little cynical about sort of the role of policy and the role of, like, particularly nonprofits in sort of getting the message out about what's happening and trying to get some systematic changes that will help, knowing that they're probably going to suck and will need to be changed and refined over time. But just reading through it, I just ticked off a lot of stuff as you were going through those last chapters, like a checklist of like, oh God, this is stuff that a nonprofit should be doing, you know, connecting experts and victims with policymakers, you know, to do hearings and to testify and to help us shape legislation that's going to come one way or the other, you know, helping victims do PR that do want to speak out and be public. And so I'm just wondering and curious is if you see any, you mentioned, I think, one in one of the last chapters of the book, one nonprofit that's been doing some good work in the area, but I'm just curious as to if you see any others or what role you see that type of organization playing in fixing this mess.
So my biggest concern with nonprofits is if we only seem, is like, if that's the thing that we're giving sort of advocacy legitimately, the legitimacy attention economy stuff too, and not grassroots initiatives, I worry about delegitimizing those when, I mean, I considered making Crash a nonprofit, but that requires a level of transparency and financial stuff already going into it. That is a barrier to entry to a lot of people, especially like, I mean, come on, we're going around pissing off Nazis. You don't really want to be transparent about that if there's other people involved, because that could get them in harm's way pretty obviously. So I worry about this continual sort of, because institutions have more to lose, right? Like, you do get that sort of, like, power that can come with it and a megaphone, but I don't want that to overpower grassroots efforts that are not, that don't have donors to answer to. Because that's, like, my biggest worry is the way that capitalism intertwines with this is nasty. But I think, like, there's definitely room for it because, you know, like it or not, that's kind of where we're at. And sometimes having a stamp that says, hey, this big company gives a shit, can open some doors for you. And it's the same issue with that I have with academia. So as long as it's like not accidentally just as collateral damage delegitimizing grassroots efforts, I think that there's plenty people can do. I mean, because it's not like what I do is special at all, like, which is why it's all in a book. So y'all can do it now. This is not copyrighted info. Just do whatever. Hi.
This is really fascinating to me. And I'm not a gamer or whatnot, but just still, as someone who understands being harassed or whatnot, I think it's still pretty universal.
Yeah.
And I'm sorry that you had to go through this. My question is, though, is in terms of like what the federal government can do, what agencies sort of like who handles like federal thinking on, you know, how the internet is policed?
Currently the FBI, and it's garbage at it.
That's my question.
Yeah,
the FBI would be the one who sets the policy.
And they enforce it because this stuff usually goes over state lines as well. It's very rarely like if it is something that happens, you have to already know who your attacker is, basically, for a lot of this. And if they're in another country, you're basically screwed, even though that's like super common. If it's someone that's still in the U.S., like sometimes some stuff can be done about it, but it's up to the FBI. And I've worked with them on my own case, and it's just been like, they called me up one day and they're like, "Is there someone who hates you in Florida?" I'm like, "Could you be more specific?" They're like, "Yeah, we picked up this guy for this other thing, and he had like 2 gigs about you on his computer too." I'm like, "What other thing?" They're like, "Well, that's classified. We can't tell you that." I'm like, I don't know, man. I don't know what to tell you. I'm probably someone hates me. He's like, "Does anyone come to mind?" I'm like, "What? No, I don't." Thanks for that nightmare, though, agent.
Yeah,
that's cool.
So it's not state level. It is.
But my case against my ex was state level because I knew who he was, and I actually had to, under secrecy, go back to Boston every time he violated the restraining order to issue another thing in person.
Oh, geez. Okay.
To go through another show cause hearing, to which one of which he brought a date to, which was really fucking weird. Oh yeah, no, it was 2 years of hot mess. He filed an appeal to the restraining order 2 months before it was set to expire, and I couldn't renew it anyway because I tried to get a restraining order in Seattle where I had moved
to.
And
you could only do it at night because you're a vampire.
Yes, which is like really hard. Like there's no 24-hour courts.
But no, I mean, to go back to the original question,
right.
I don't need all the details, okay. But it's the FBI that it would be the agent that would be the agency that would set,
unless
that would normalize this if.
I mean, it's tricky because, like, it's not like online abuse is its own separate thing. Frequently, domestic violence gets one toe in there. So it's like it can't just be one simple body because it's like a lot of like offline abuse becomes online abuse as well. And we need
sure.
to kind of erase this mental divide between online and offline because that's increasingly becoming irrelevant to a lot of stuff, including, as I imagine, the legal system as we go forward. Because it's not like this stuff's going anywhere anytime soon.
Right.
So I would be very worried if it was only supposed to be one agency when really
sure.
everybody down to local police, which are usually the people that swatting when they call up and say, "Hey, now that they get your home address," they call up and they say to the police or a third party like Crime Stoppers, "So-and-so is building a bomb at this address." And then they hope that you'll get swatted, which is when the police basically bust in your door. And they, especially if you're doing anything like live video, they like to watch it happen. But the hope is that you'll think that your house is getting broken into, resist and get murdered. So even local police need to know what's going on because we have a militarized police force. And I mean, like even then, like even in the best of cases, like because we would call up on behalf of some of our clients and be like, to try to, if they wanted us to do that and swatting seemed imminent, like call ahead and be like, "Hey, just so you know, you're going to get a prank call at this address. And it's just, I know you still have to check it out, but you know, maybe knock with your fist and not with your boot." And that helped to de-escalate, but sometimes, but not always. So it's like down to the local level. It's one of those things with the system. It comes down to whoever's answering the phones or at the desk that day. So everybody needs to be educated.
All right. Thank you.
No problem. Okay, cool.
Hello.
Hello.
I was wondering how development is going on your game based on the work of Chuck Tingle.
That's
and also, is it Mac compatible?
That's my favorite question. We just got into IndieCade. Yeah. Which is cool because we're like in alpha, like barely. I'm happy that people are already into the game. I kind of cut a new trailer. We are using this weird game about proving love is real by solving a lot of problems with your butt. We were using it to actually work with SAG-AFTRA to improve workers' rights relations between the unions and independent game developers because SAG had like their Hollywood budget movie things, and then their experimental indie budget things. But that, but they didn't have that version for video games. They had the interactive contract that was sort of like based on like AAA studios, which they're currently still striking, which is the longest strike that SAG-AFTRA's ever had. So I was like, hey, but we're cool though, right? They're like, oh yeah, we should like think about how to work with indies, because I'm like, yeah, it sounds like all of the labor issues you're having, we care about that, and a lot of people left AAA because of that. So come hang out with us, we're cool. So that's kind of slowed down development a bit, but I'm really, really happy that we're able to do that.
Will it be Mac compatible?
Yes.
Yay.
I'm actually trying to get a 3DO development kit right now. I'm not joking. I'm really trying to get a 3DO dev kit, because I just want to see what if I can do that. Hi, yes, you're the last person, no pressure.
Yeah, sorry.
So one of the sections of your book that really resonated with me was actually the beginning, where you were talking about sort of your childhood growing up outside, but also sort of on the internet, being in these communities. I think probably a lot of people in this room who've sort of grown up with the internet as a thing sort of existed in some kind of community as a kid, whether it be like 4chan or Neopets or Gaia Online.
Oh,
or
Gaia.
Like, I know there was an article on the internet a while ago about like an entire community of virtual pet owners. I mean, some of these
things, there's a bunch of them.
Oh, yeah.
Sparkle dogs, man.
Yeah. I mean, so some of these places are like irredeemably shitty, and then other places, just when you look at them from far away, seem kind of pointless.
Mm-hmm.
But when they disappear or get wiped off the map, sometimes it can feel kind of sad. I was wondering if there's been an experience in your life when a virtual space you called home became something else or vanished, and if you sort of felt anything.
Yeah, I know there's a few conspiracy theories about this, but I'm going for it anyway. Okay. I used to hang out on Something Awful a lot. Mostly just reading, because never post, just don't do it. But like mostly in like the game threads and stuff like that. And I went back sometime recently, and I'm like, oh, this is a nightmare now. Like, oh, the moderators have given up. Low tax, no. But I mean, like at the same time, like community moderation is such a thing that we don't think about as much anymore. You know, I mean, look at the nightmare that Reddit is. And we also don't pay community moderators, which is super weird to me, because that is a lot of work and it sucks. And it usually involves a lot of people screaming at you. And it's like, the cool thing about user-generated content is we can do a bunch of weird stuff that no one would think of. But the bad thing is we kind of treat the people that are actively working on basically tending the gardens as disposable and like just lucky enough to have a say in it, which is like, no, we should probably, like, if you're moderating Reddit, you should probably be compensated, because like, good Lord, that looks terrible.
Yeah, thanks.
No problem. And I think that's it for me. So I'm going to just sit down now. Well, this is weird. I'm going to be over here.
Live at Politics and Prose is a co-production of The Bookstore and Slate.com. For information about upcoming Politics and Prose events, visit politics-prose.com. And please let us know what you think of this program. Our email is podcasts@slate.com.